Hello, Rock and Roll Rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. This is your host, Rosie, and I am here to bring you more fun facts about rock and roll, even though I can't breathe this week. The trees hate me. I live in Texas, and it's juniper season, and it's one of the most allergenic plants out there, up there with ragweed, so we're all suffering. But I will persevere in spite of my suffering to bring you fun facts about rock and roll until I literally stop breathing instead of mostly stop breathing, which is where I'm at right now. So long as I'm alive, you'll be hearing about the good old rock and roll, and I will kick this week's episode off with a disclaimer that it's not actually gonna be about Ronnie Spector like I alluded it might be on my Instagram, because Ronnie's career was just too long-lasting, vast, and varied to do her justice with a hastily patched-together episode, you know, just regurgitating whatever is on Wikipedia. I like to bring more nuanced and obscure information to y'all than what you can readily gain off of any of the 100 obituaries on her that, you know, People and News Today and all those other websites have released. So, you'll get an episode on her, Ronnie Spector, never fear, because Amazon's dropping her audio book of her autobiography, in a couple months, and so once I get through that, I'll bring you the fun facts and highlights that I have gleaned from it, and probably do an episode in August for her birthday, which I found out happens to be the same day as my brother's, so that's cool. She's way cooler than my brother. And speaking of really cool things, this week's episode is going to be about one of the coolest things, which is the Ramones, and specifically my favorite album by them, because the Ramones Leave Home turned 45 this week. So there's going to be a bunch of 45-year punk anniversaries this week for the early punk stuff, because, I mean, not this week, but this year, because it's 1977, 45 years ago, so lots of moving and shaking happening, but this is the Ramones' second album, which, incidentally, predates Never Mind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols, by 9 months, so if anybody is trying to tell you that punk was invented in Britain, they are incorrect, and if I was doing graduate work, my thesis would be on why they're wrong, because punk started in America, specifically New York, though some credit can be given to the Detroit area with, like, it acts like a gay in the Stooges and the MC5, but that's a whole nother gambit and episode and rant for another day. Like, this is Ramble On with Rosie, not Rant On with Rosie, but the Ramones in New York at the CBGBs did punk before Britain did. So, take that. Not that I have anything against the British punk acts, by the way. I absolutely love The Clash. I have small resentment towards the Sex Pistols. Not anything personally or musically, just the fact that, as evidenced with Ramones Leave Home, their nasty image that they were projecting and the, you know, look and everything that they went for did no favors to Ramones record sales. So, yes, I kind of resent the fact that they, yet, along with everything else in this world, somehow prevented the Ramones from possible charting success that they wanted, you know, as recognition for their fantasticness. Though at the end of the day, does it matter too much, because the Ramones' influence is so widespread and long-lasting that even as much as I love The Clash, I'd have to say the Ramones' musical impact, not so much social impact that goes to The Clash, but musical impact was so broad and perpetual that there are songs that came out in the early 2000s that I enjoyed as a teenager, that now, after having listened to the Ramones as much as I have, I'm like, yeah, they totally stole that sound from the Ramones and just tweaked it a little bit. And that's, 35 years after the Ramones' first album. So now we're at 45 years after the Ramones' first album, and we're still. Indie music, especially, is still very much Ramones influenced. So, getting to the second album, which is a staple, it doesn't get talked about as much as Rocket to Russia, and I resent the people who say it's just a repeat of the first album because it's not. The songs are different, the production value is higher, and Joey's voice has improved. The next time you'll see, or rather hear, this much of a marked improvement in Joey's vocals won't be until after he's worked with Phil Spector. Like, that's the next time you can hear his, embracing his vocal capabilities to a further extent, like where you can tell the difference from album to album based on Joey's singing capability. So, they were not sitting on their hands. This wasn't just a repeat of the Ramones. The Ramones Leave Home is a fantastic album and is essential to the Ramones, not Ramones, Ramones folklore. Because it has songs like Pinhead on it, and there are others. My brain is literally too clogged with pollen to list them off the top of my head, but oh well, for one, the Ramones seal, which is ubiquitous these days on everybody's t-shirt, whether they know who the band is or not, is featured on the back cover, so it's like the first time it was broadly seen far and wide was on the back cover of the Ramones Leave Home album. So that alone is some impact, and we'll get to the musical impact as we break down the songs on the Ramones Leave Home. The album was produced by Tommy, or rather co-produced by Tommy, as was the first album, and as would be Rocket to Russia, and I believe Road to Ruin afterwards, and then Tommy wouldn't produce for a while. But, Ramones Leave Home was co-produced between Tommy Ramone and Tony Bongiovi, who, aside from being a very credible producer with some very cool credits behind his name, is also the second cousin to the, moderately famous John Bon Jovi, who simplified his name to John Bon Jovi for, a stage name. So, that's kind of cool. He's from Jersey, same as his cousin, so also fun facts. But the Ramones Leave Home album is like my favorite album by the Ramones, and it's hard to pick a favorite, but I love this album so much, hence why I staunchly defend it from the people who are like, it's just a repeat of the Ramones. It's definitely not. And we'll get into that somewhat during this week's episode. It sort of bridges the gap in progress between the first Ramones album and Rocket to Russia. Like, it fills that niche and it lays some serious groundwork, like I was saying with Pinhead and other things. Like, it's essential to the Ramones culture. Like, once you've, gotten past just knowing Blitzkrieg Bop, your next step should reasonably be to listen to the Ramones Leave Home, because it's a great album. And on that note, we'll dig into the song breakdown. And it begins with Glad to See You Go, if that's not an ironic way to begin a song, or rather begin an album. Glad to See You Go was written by Dee Dee and Joey, and was inspired by Dee Dee's completely basket case girlfriend leaving. I mean, I'm saying this as in, like, she made Dee Dee look well adjusted and smart and intelligent and, you know, capable and completely sane and normal. Which the completely sane and normal part is not an adjective normally pinned to Dee Dee Ramone. So, Connie Grip was out there, way off the farm. Stabbed him in the butt with a broken beer bottle, kind of crazy. And by most reports, Dee Dee was too gentlemanly to hit a woman even when she was beating up on him. So being glad to see you go was no miscalculation when they finally broke up. So that they literally yelled it at her out the apartment window after she, you know, took her stuff and left. Riddance, clearly. The song actually references, amongst other things, Charles Manson, which is almost more of a Johnny reference there, even though Dee Dee and Joey wrote it, because according to Mickey Lay, Joey Ramone's brother, Johnny was maybe a little disturbingly interested in Charles Manson. You know, of course, Johnny was also notoriously known for kind of liking to troll people a little bit. He may have been the OG troll along with Dee Dee. So, who's to say who inspired what and how that got in the song, but there is a reference to Charles Manson. Make of it what you will. The second song is Gimme Gimme Shock Treatment. Ah, yes, the Ramones and all their lovely songs about mental health. it's actually a Dee Dee and John song. And Dee Dee's got his usual delightful bubblegum psychosis going on, which is just the best. I mean, it's as trademark the Ramones to be upbeatly singing about, you know, mental health issues as is as their logo, or, you know, shouting 1, 2, 3, 4, or all the other quintessential Ramones things. So Gimme Gimme Shock Treatment is just another fine example in that, you know, vein of character. They're also, to me, they're kind of doing the, with the lyrics, the punk thing of making fun of, hippies, because there's the whole, like, peace and love reference in the lyrics. Like, peace and love are here to stay, which totally sounds like something, you know, like, out of a Fifth Dimension song. Which I could easily see, you know, punk and its sort of disrespect towards the hippie culture, totally wanting to make fun of that kind of, you know, vibe. So, especially with it being Dee Dee and John, like, totally seems a plausible cause for, you know, inspiration on those lyrics. One of the things I really like musically about this song is Tommy's drum sound. Like, I'm bad with technical terms, so bear with me, but I want to say it's like the drum crashes. Like, it's the part that comes like right after Joey goes, "Gimme, gimme shock treatment," and then it's just. It's got a really cool, like, snappy sound to it. I really like Tommy's drum sound on this album, which yet again shows progress and growth because, like, I mean, Tommy had never played drums until he became the drummer for the Ramones, as I covered in my We're a Happy Family episode on the Ramones a few months ago. So his skill is growing, same as Joey's vocal skills grow. And you can even notice an improvement on some of the songs on Johnny's guitar. So, yet again, people who say the Ramones Leave Home is just a repeat of the first album are wrong and need to be hit in the head with a toaster. If you're one of those people, I'm apologizing to you, but also maybe recommending that you go make impact with a kitchen appliance with your skull. No, just kidding. You're entitled to your opinion. But I'm also entitled to mine, and it's different for sure, because I love the Ramones Leave Home. Great album. And we're continuing on this great album with the third track, which is I Remember You, which is Joey at his sweetest, hopeless romantic best. Joey writes some of the sweetest songs that the Ramones ever, performed. Like, about the only super sweet love song that isn't a Joey song is I Want to Be Your Boyfriend by Tommy. I could have sworn that was a Joey song. It sounds so in his niche, in his little wheelhouse of writing, very sort of 60s bubblegum punk love songs. So, yeah, that was a Tommy song, but I Remember You is definitely a Joey song. And it's also proof that Joey was writing songs about heartbreak long before Linda, so not every Ramone song about a broken heart after the Linda escapade is about Linda or inspired by her. Like, yeah, that had an impact on the band, but I always feel like people overblow it a little bit. Like, it had a personal impact on Joey for sure. I've been reading his biography by Mickey, and definite, impact on Joey's sort of view of other people and trust and stuff, but not every heartbreak song is specifically inspired by one person who broke your heart. And I Remember You is proof of that because it's a bittersweet heartbreak song years before he probably even met Linda. So make of that what you will. And like I said, it's a lovely little bittersweet, snappy little love song. I like it. The vocals on it are great. But the next song blows it, and so many other songs out of the water. I absolutely love Oh, I Love Her So, which is another hopeless romantic Joey love song. At his absolute best at that. It's like, if you had to pick a song that, like, prove that Joey writes the really sweet love songs, this would be the song that she would use as evidence, I feel, because it is, it 100% sums it up. It's so, the lyrics are so sweet with the falling in love by the soda machine, and then we went down to Coney Island. It's just, it's got such nice little details in it while still staying true to that blueprint of the 60s, beach music love song. But it's got like the lyrics have a little bit more nuance to them than your typical Beach Boys song. Like, they're painting a scene, even if the song is relatively short. It's just really well done, and I love it. To me, it's kind of rather So Young and in Love off of Pleasant Dreams reminds me of Oh, I Love Her So, rather than the other way around, though I do think I knew Pleasant Dreams before I knew the Ramones Leave Home. So one reminds me of the other. It's just Oh, I Love Her So is like So Young and in Love, but without the morose splatter platter ending, which I 100%, when I listen to So Young and in Love, I literally will, like, when it gets to the break before the car crash, I will just skip to the next song on Pleasant Dreams. I was like, I don't need the depressing ending. If I wanted that, I'd go listen to Leader of the Pack by whichever girl group that was that did it. Or maybe it was Mary Wells. Maybe it was a single, artist, not a girl group. But point is, or I'd listen to Oh, Where Can My Baby Be? I'm like, if I want to hear about morose teenage heartbreak caused by a car crash, there are enough songs on that already. We could skip any further. But that's, like I said, on Pleasant Dreams, not the Ramones Leave Home. But that's like the little side note there. Also, this is the song that proved that the Ramones' influence permeates so much music, especially like on the indie side of things, because listening to this song, it struck me how some songs I knew by the Kooks that I listened to when I was in my teens had a marked Ramones influence. So I was just like, oh, I've been listening to Ramones influence stuff when I only knew three Ramones songs at that time. So that was cool. Love seeing that their legacy on music is undimmed after decades, even something that I dare say no other punk band can claim to that extent. Like, The Clash had a definite impact on people, like, as far as their awareness, both politically and of other genres of music, and, introducing rock and roll kids into things like reggae and, Latin influenced music and things like that. But as far as like impacting the music that came after, where you can hear the fingerprints of their sound all over the place, the Ramones are not just at the top of the punk heap at that. They're at the top of, well, maybe not the top, but in the top tier of that particular category of musical influence across the board, across the genres. Their influence is staggering at times when you take it into context. Like, even Debbie Harry of Blondie was saying, yeah, the little jingles, rock and roll sounding jingles you hear on TV ads. This is an interview during, like, I think the 90s or early 2000s. She's like, it's Ramones. Like, their music just permeated the music that followed it. And so, Oh, I Love Her So was one of those songs that called that to my attention, aside from just hearing other people say it. Now, the next song is one of those essential to the Ramones folklore and culture songs, which is Carbona Not Glue, which is a national treasure. This song, like, it's a bummer it had to get cut off the second editions of the albums because they didn't want to get sued by the Carbona company because it was trademarked. But singing about household cleaning products was never so rockin' and exciting as this song made it. And this is coming from a cleaning lady, so I know a thing or two about cleaning products, though I don't think I've ever used any Carbona for sniffing or otherwise purposes. I have never even come across this stuff, but it is a stain remover, and I think like a general carpet cleaner as well. Regardless, it's a great song. Like, it deserves a shrine of its own just for having the line, "My brain is stuck from shooting glue." Like, that is poetic mastery. I'm sorry. It's like a pun wrapped in a disturbing line of lyric. It's great. This whole song is great, and it slaps. It's such a just up-tempo, fun, upbeat song about disturbing things, which is like the Ramones trademark. We're gonna sing about disturbing set things in the most fun, upbeat, happy way imaginable. Gotta love the Ramones. But yeah, it's also, I appreciated their highlight of sort of the TV generation of kids and what part that may or may not have played in their juvenile delinquency and glue sniffing and carpet cleaner sniffing habits. So that, I mean, to me, that's something that was later sort of elaborated on more fully and more philosophically on by like bands like The Clash with Lost in the Supermarket, which is one of my favorite Clash songs off of London Calling. So I appreciate it. I mean, especially because at this point we're all, most people alive are of the TV generation, so it gives you a moment of pause to think about that sort of impact on how you live your life now and how you lived it as a teenager. Which is, interesting. And they can go back to sniffing carpet cleaner. No. It's like I appreciate, things that make me think, which I like things that don't make me think too. And it's not often that the Ramones like make you get a little philosophical and reflective, but if you want to, Carbona Not Glue can make you do that. The next song cracks me up for personal reasons. It is Susie Is a Headbanger. which is not just a banger of a song, but it's hysterical to me because my mother's name, which is Sue, was occasionally called Susie. And in the last 2 years, I had to explain to my mother, who, bear in mind, turned 70 this past year, what headbanging was. And I'm like, how am I related to you, woman? Like, I love you dearly. But how do you not know what headbanging is? Like, come on! What rock did you live under? You were alive when the Ramones came out. I mean, you were in your 20s. Just 'cause you got married and had kids doesn't mean you should have never turned on a radio. God. There's moments like that where I'm like, am I actually your child? Like, how did you not know? Meanwhile, my best friend Jackie's mother got her leg signed by Joey Ramone. Never thought I'd be jealous of somebody's leg, but here we are. So, contrast in mothers, to be sure. But also, why Susie is a headbanger cracks me up because my mother is the geek, even in spite of occasionally having the nickname of Susie. I was like, they got the name wrong. Susie is the geek mother. Rosie is a headbanger, I guess, is my rewrite. But it's a fun, and to me, it's another one of those songs that fits into like the quintessential Ramones song category, which is why Leave Home is sort of such an essential album to listen to get in on bits of the backstory to, songs that are referenced as part of the Ramones culture. The next song being probably the biggest one of those songs, which is Pinhead. Because not only do you get the Gubba Gubba Hey from it, which is important, as I recall when I was digging deeper into the Ramones, Jackie, who, like I said, her mother got her leg signed by Joey, so needless to say, she was a Ramones fan, insisted that I must watch the entirety of Rock and Roll High School before I, and I quote, went Gabba Gabba Hang all over the place. I was like, didn't know that Gabba Gabba Hey could become a verb, but you learn something new every day. So now I am at liberty, after watching Rock and Roll High School multiple times, to go Gabba Gabba Hang wherever I please. But Pinhead is like second only to Blitzkrieg Bop for just essential Ramones song, so you understand what the people who are into the band are talking about when they say things like Gabba Gabba Hey or spell dumb incorrectly. Which they don't spell it incorrectly in the song, so I would be curious to know if anybody does why, when you see it spelled out, be it in Rock and Roll High School in the film or on signs around the Ramones, that the second time dumb is spelled out, they spell it DMUB after spelling it correctly the first time. I would like to know the backstory on that. Not sure who is left alive to tell us these days. Maybe Marky knows. It's about the best person I can think to come up with to ask, because Arturo and the original four are gone. But Pinhead is just fantastic and essential and the best. And the very famous Gabba Gabba Hey is actually inspired by the Gobble Gobble Hey at the end of the 1930s movie Freaks, which the Ramones saw in a theater, I think when they were playing a venue in the Midwest. So they got the idea from an old kind of horror movie. Not too surprising there. They do have a penchant for the macabre horror movies. But while the Freaks movie inspired Gabba Gabba Hey for the Ramones' use of it ended up inspiring the title of the children's TV series Yo Gabba Gabba. So it all comes full circle and goes through various mediums from movie to music to television. So, fun times. How a 30s horror movie influenced a 2000s children's TV show. and other fun things you could write an essay on. But anyways, the next song is Now I Want to Be a Good Boy, which was written just by Dee Dee. And don't look at the lyrics too closely if you're prone to like triggering of your PTSD and have been through an abusive relationship or had troubled times between you and a trusted loved one, because the lyrics to this song are not pretty at all. They're really sad, especially when you think of them in the light of the childhood that Dee Dee Ramone had, which was awful. Like, potentially worse than any of the other bandmates' childhoods, and none of them were particularly rosy, upbringings. I don't know much about Tommy's, but I know the other three all either had very strict and or physically abusive at times situations with parents, but Dee Dee's was the worst. Horrible. Not fun. So, looking at the lyrics to Now I Want to Be a Good Boy, it just very sort of painfully and poignantly reflects those feelings that you can have when you love the person who's hurting you and you want to make them proud, but you also want to run away from home. So, poor Dee Dee pouring out his, childhood trauma in song. So, like I said, yeah, just don't listen to the lyrics too closely. It's much more fun when you don't. Once you listen to the lyrics closely, you're like, this is so sad. But on a happier topic, sort of, you have the next song, which is Swallow My Pride, which is one of my favorite songs off the album, which was a Dee Dee and Joey composition and was reportedly about the frustration of really not having any major commercial success after having had a contract for like almost 2 years. And yeah, like I said, nothing had really shown out of it too much. And though, honestly, you can make of this song whatever you want to, because other than the refrain, most of it is unintelligible. I literally thought Joey was singing about Luden's cough drops for a minute. And that's not just because I've been taking a lot of cough drops lately. I thought of that even when I had no congestion, because I can't tell what Joey's saying for most of the song, but I still love the song. And it's the Ramones who have sung about refried beans in songs, so singing about Luden's cough drops didn't seem too out of the ordinary for them. But it's not. I can't really say what much of the lyrics are, other than it's been 2 years, and then the refrain of "Gotta swallow my pride." But the rest of it, I leave up to your imagination or your Google searches. Still, great song, regardless of unintelligible lyrics. It just slaps so hard. It, like I said, it's one of my favorite songs on the album. It's one of the reasons why the Ramones Leave Home is my favorite album. The next song is also a more pause for thought kind of song, like Now I Want to Be a Good Boy, but not near as depressing. It's What's Your Game, which is by Joey. And according to Mickey Lee's book, Joey had dated a couple different girls from the mental hospital that he had visited. So the quite insane girl, it might not just mean she's nuts and stabbing him like Dee Dee's girlfriend. It might be literally the fact that she's mentally unwell. Not to say that Joey's, I mean, not to say that Dee Dee's girlfriend wasn't, because clearly if she's stabbing people, she's got issues. But the more tender side of the lyrics, where it's, all you ever want to be is like all the other girls you see, would really make sense for somebody struggling with mental health issues, like Joey did, and presumably the girls he dated from the mental institution did as well. And even if you're more, neurotypical kind of quote-unquote normal, that's still a very relatable feeling. I think almost every woman, especially in her teens, has wanted to be like all the other girls that she saw. So he wrote it inspired, by girls he had dated with mental health issues, but it's honestly a relatable line, whatever your mental health history is. So I that adds some depth and tenderness to, that song, which adds that to the whole overall mural of the album, where you're getting these more insightful moments in the songs. Now, the next song was written by none of the band members, but is a total bop. They own California Sun. Not gonna lie, it was actually written by Henry Glover, who I don't think is related to Danny or any of the acting Glovers, but was really cool because he was sort of a pioneer of like being a successful black artist at a white record company in like the 60s and I think even back into the 50s. Had a very long career. I think he played saxophone. He also was a producer, writer, arranger, did a lot of cool stuff. So he's the dude who wrote the song. And then the Rivieras, which were a band from Indiana, made a hit out of it right before the British invasion. And then the Dictators did a hilarious and somewhat explicit cover of the song. And then the Ramones did their version, which to me is the version of the song. Hands down, just knocks everything else out of the park. They use it to great effect in Rock and Roll High School, during a chase scene, which it's just, it makes the scene. Like, that whole sequence would be flat and lame if it wasn't for their version of California Sun playing in the background. Just makes the whole sequence. Love it to death. Cannot say enough about their version of California Sun. To me, it's the best. The next song is Commando, which is about Dee Dee, or was written by Dee Dee and John, and maybe about John. The source is not really known. It's not really stated by any, like verified sources. Some people are like, oh, it was inspired by, Dee Dee and John's love of war memorabilia and things like that, or is trying to be a political statement, which I find a little less likely. Now, the theory that it was inspired by John kind of running the band like a dictator and a commander and commando, commanding officer, makes sense to me of all the theories I've heard about this song, because Johnny was a military school graduate and was known for being a bit of a hard ass. There's like, that's the only word that I know of for this, for what Johnny Ramone was reported to be. And while Dee Dee appreciated the discipline, he also didn't appreciate the discipline because it got in his way, and putting up with John was not the funnest thing to do. So I could see him sort of writing a song, taking a good-natured swipe at John's dictatorial ways. I mean, because he's taking not direct swipes at Tommy and Joey, but the rule number four of only eating kosher salami while you have two Jewish bandmates could reasonably seem like a good-natured jibe towards them, or it could have been inspired by any of the dozens of other people that were of Jewish background that were circulating around the band or in the other bands that they circulated around with. There was like, there's a whole book on the influence of Jewish culture on punk rock. It's called The Heebie-Jeebies at the CBGBs, and I haven't read it yet, but I, whenever I'm researching things like this, I end up seeing it referenced by other articles or people's posts, and I was like, ah, so it's got good source material. I have so many books to read, it's on the list. But moving on from Commando to You're Gonna Kill That Girl, which was inspired sort of by the Beatles song of You're Gonna Lose That Girl, and then it just takes a very zany, dark twist as Ramon's songs do, Joey wrote this one, and it's a complete banger, and it's one of those really good uses of contrast. You'll get it in other Ramon songs later in their career, but I think that's maybe like the first time that they like go mellow in a song and then blast your face off and then switch back to being mellow for a little bit and then blast your face off again. Because it has that really mellow strum before DD counts in the time, and then it just chainsaws you to bits, and then it does that again in like the latter part of the middle of the song, which is just poetic timing. Glorious. Love it. So yeah, like I said, it's sort of like a horror movie twist on You're Gonna Lose That Girl by the Beatles. And you know, it's just such a bop. Love it. Like, they do that thing that only the Ramones could get away with, which is somehow, you know, making things delightful and upbeat while also totally twisted. Speaking of twisted things, the next song is definitely on that list. You Should Never Have Opened That Door, which was a Dee Dee and John composition. Totally out of their horror movie playbook. Because they love them some horror movies. And there's a pretty in-depth analysis of the lyrics on Genius Lyrics, where they break down, like, the plot of what's going on in the song. And how it's sort of got some existential themes with, the lady's daughter might not have actually been about to be murdered with an axe if she hadn't opened the door. And I'm like, fair enough. I don't usually analyze Ramon songs to that extent, but cool that somebody like took this apart and made a whole movie plot out of it. I can appreciate that. And probably fairly fair, you know, a decent amount of veracity or background to it, because it's like officially on Genius Lyrics, not just somebody's random comment. And that closes out the album, unless you have the CD that I do, which has sort of a bonus track at the end of Babysitter, which was written by the band. Another teen romance song that proves the Ramones could write hits for days, just everybody back in those days was dumb as a stump. How they didn't have the chart success that these songs should have had is beyond me. I do not understand. I can't blame it all on the Sex Pistols. I can't blame it all on disco. I don't know what the third element of their being so dang underrated was, but they were. The slight, not bonus track, but it's what replaced Carbona Not Glue on the second edition of the albums, was Sheena Is a Punk Rocker, which was a Joey composition, and just bopped to no end. Like, if you count this as part of Leave Home rather than Rocket to Russia, where it actually appears, you know, on the first and all following editions of the album. But if you count it in with Leave Home, which it appears on, like I said, on the second edition to replace Carbona Not Glue, it's another one of those essential to the whole Ramones culture. It's Greek bop, and you know, I Want to Be Sedated. It's like a ultimate Ramones tune. And it just, it also sort of nods to their juvenile interest, because it's based off of Sheena, the Queen of the Jungle from the comic books. So you get another one of those cool juvenile interests pulled into song form, like horror movies and baseball and military memorabilia and things like that. You get to see their nerdy side shine through in their lyrics. There's also a lovely animated video of the song, which involves Sheena chasing New Yorkers around with a spear and swinging around on a rope and having a pet tiger and all sorts of fun things. Well worth checking out the video. I love it. I've watched it several times. And it's also notable as one of the first songs to explicitly refer to punk rock. In fact, it predates Dave Marsh's use of the term by about a month or so. Dave Marsh is considered to be the first music critic to use the term punk rock. And Sheen as a Punk Rocker predates his article in, like, Cream magazine that used punk rock as a term to describe a band that he was reviewing's music, predates it by, like, a month. So the Ramones didn't just invent the genre, they might have invented the term as well. So do yourself a favor, listen to this album, which is so underrated and so good and just needs to be appreciated more. Like, it gets over, it's like, it's the poor middle child between the first album and Rocket to Russia, and I can't stand for it being overlooked anymore, hence why it got a whole episode on it, which has went longer than my usual episodes, so sorry about that, but hope you don't mind my breaking down my favorite album. And just enjoy, and I will be back next week. It will probably also be on the Ramones, but more specifically on Joey, and in the vein of the episode I did on Joe Strummer in Kindness, called Kindness Calling, that I did a few months ago. It'll be more along the lines of talking about Joey Ramone and bravery, because I can't think of a more courageous artist or even any sort of celebrity offhand, and I'll break that down some next week for y'all, unless something else comes up. Hopefully no more musicians die for me to talk about. Don't want to talk about that. I don't want any more musicians to die. So I will talk to y'all about that next week. In the meantime, have a great week, be kind to each other, and rock on.